D-Day NDC, 106.7 The Fan, Denton Day, at The Denton Day on Twitter. We're going to get to Lynnell Willingham in a matter of moments here on The Fan. Pat Boyle, who covers the Yankees with us in 30 minutes. He might be laughing at us for the entire interview after the performance of the Nationals' bullpen, blowing now their 27th save of the season, still at around the halfway point of the year. A little past the halfway point, so hooray for that. But 27 is entirely too large of a number to have hit at this point in the year, and they have done that, yet they still sit at 500 with a game against the Yankees today in about 2 hours, to where they could get a game over 500 going into the All-Star break. I was watching a little bit of the soccer yesterday, England and Norway, with Haaland, Erling Haaland. He wasn't awesome in the game, but God, I like watching that guy play. England advances, Argentina advances. Naturally, the Argentina game got a little weird with the officiating. Where have we seen that before? They get everything. And boy, it must be nice. I love Messi. I want to see Messi play as long as I can. But boy, they get everything. And just watching them get all the benefit of the calls is like, oh my God. Oh my God. So you'll get Argentina and England. You'll get France and Spain in the final four of the World Cup. I don't think that anyone is beating France. If you've watched any of France, Kylian Mbappe is fantastic. And that's just a well-oiled machine at the moment in the world of soccer. I've gotten kind of into it partly because of Team USA. Partly because you're doing national stuff with Westwood One, I kind of pay attention to it, but I kind of enjoyed watching soccer, like way more than I thought, minus the dives, because boy, some of these dudes be taking dives, man. Like, real, real big dives. That's what happened yesterday in the Argentina and the Switzerland match. Guy takes a dive, gets tossed, and everyone loses their mind, but then you see it in replay, and you're like, well, he clearly took a dive there. Like, how are you getting upset at this sort of thing, and everyone just losing their mind? Like, oh my God, how do you throw him out? I mean, the rules have to matter at least a little bit. It did look weird that it went in favor of Argentina, but I digress. Lynnell Willingham covers all things DC sports, host on Westwood One Sports Night, and is an overall enjoyable human being. And he's with us here now on 106.7 The Fan, at NELL_BTP. Lynnell, I want to get to the Wizards. AJ DeBonsta in action tonight. We're waiting on Lynnell Willingham. Sorry, thought he was here already. So we're waiting on Lynnell Willingham to jump on here with us. DeBonsta in action, though, as I had mentioned prior to the commercial break. Wizards and Kings tonight. I'm excited about this. I'm excited about Trey Johnson. You're not going to see Jameer Watkins. He is day-to-day summer league with a knee situation. And if I am remembering correctly, I think the knee, tweaking of the knee, was on a really nasty crossover from Darren Peterson. So that's a tough one. I mean, Jameer Watkins is a defensive demon, as we are calling him, right? He's fantastic playing on the defensive side of the floor, but the crossover was filthy. So we got Lynnell Willingham now. Lynnell, I want to talk about the AJ DeBonsta stuff that's going to happen later tonight with him taking on the Kings, but I got to first get your thought on what's been the topic of discussion for the show today. It was the topic of discussion for the show yesterday, and I'm hoping and praying it is not the topic of discussion for all of our shows on Monday, but the Nationals' bullpen, as I've decided to call them, blew their 27th save of the season. How are you taking in watching the Nationals this year and the inability to win games that they are leading late?
Thank you for having me, by the way, pal. This is awesome. Look, we were kind of texting back and forth about it last night, like, I get the frustration of Nats fans, right? Like, the bullpen is not just bad. It has been historically bad. They're on pace to have more blown saves than any team in the history of Major League Baseball. I say all that to say this, though. What they are doing offensively, and I think you have astutely laid it out over the past couple of days, the major frustration is offensively, they're one of the best teams in Major League Baseball, and they're good enough to be one of the top four or five teams in all of Major League Baseball if they had any sort of support from their bullpen. My silver lining here for Nats fans is this, right? When Paul Toboni and Blake Butera were brought here, man, it was supposed to signal a switch in the philosophical approach of how they team build and how they move as an organization, leaning more into the analytics approach. Clearly, when it comes to their approach at the plate, at both the major league level and the minor league level, there have been significant changes. So that is what I would hang my hat on right now if I'm a Nats fan, is we have, like, solved the riddle of hitting. For a group that had been lifeless offensively over the past couple of seasons, to see them with largely the same personnel doing this is super refreshing. I am not at this point, Denton, willing to mortgage any future asset to get a bullpen arm, because even if they do get a bullpen arm, I don't think they're winning the World Series.
No, I don't think they'd win the World Series. I don't think there's anyone that they could grab, because I think their starting pitching still needs help as relation to long-term, like, real big winning. I mean, Griffin, all-star, he deserves it. Kay Cavalli has been good this year.
Yeah.
So, like, those guys have been good, but it's not like a Scherzer or a Strasburg. But I'd love to get them playoff experience, this young group, if these are going to be your future. And I think you can get quality arms for guys that are not – that would not, like, yeah. I what constitutes, this is what I don't know, because the farm system is so deep, right? What constitutes mortgaging your future? Because if it's like, I'm not trading any of the good guys, you know, the guys that the casual fan has heard before, Eli Willits, I'm not trading him. But if it's guys that the casual fan has not heard before, that you can convince, like, the Royals, hey, we'll take this money off of your books, because
I mean, you think about the log jam that they kind of have in the outfield, like, it feels like they got one too many outfielders, right? Is that, so, like, somebody that goes and gets you, you know,
a and that's what I'd be interested in, because where do you find, like, you can, hey, we can get rid of, or we can live without player X due to the logjam in the infield, logjam in the outfield, wherever, and we could, you know, put a guy in the bullpen that is able to pitch at the major league level, that won't just give up homers in the eight run in the eighth, ninth inning at home.
Some of these blown saves, though, have been, I mean, literally, like, comical. Like, not if you're a Nats fan, but, like, if you are
anybody else, you're just laughing at
us. Yeah, it's honestly, like, ludicrous how it's been. I think I got to go back and look. I believe it was, Spencer Nussbaum. I caught up with Toboni and had an excerpt from him kind of about this. And I think he did a good job kind of illustrating, you know, where they're currently at. It's frustrating. I like your point that you're making, though, about getting this group some playoff experience. I think that is something that shouldn't be overstated. But at what cost is kind of my next question, you know. But we'll see, man. They're an exciting group. We know that.
I mean, they make you want to watch. I will just point out here, and we'll talk some Wizards in a second. They're 10 games under 500 at home. They're 20-30 at home. That can't happen.
Jeez.
I mean, that's supposed to be where you're playing well, and that can't happen. Linnell Willingham's with us here. D-Day, NDC, Denton Day, 106.7, The Fan. Were you expecting that A.J. DeBonso was going to go tonight?
Do I think he's going to go tonight?
Were you expecting him? He is going to go. He said he is going. But do you were you expecting him after the first game to play again?
Yes, and I'll even take it a step further, Denton. I was saying this Thursday when I was on The Fan. When we talk about this next phase of Wizards basketball and getting the train to leave the station in terms of trying to compete, now is how you show everybody across the league we're winners. I want them to win the entire Las Vegas Summer League. That should be their goal. I don't want to see a situation like last year where guys get pulled after the first couple of games because they have a nagging cut. Like, you got a cut on your wrist, you got a hangnail, so we're sitting you for the rest of it. Like, no, let these guys go out and win, man. Think about the way we're being talked about nationally, right? People don't give this group much of an opportunity during the regular season to win because the Wizards haven't, you know, won the championship since the 70s. Something that's laughable and means nothing. The bottom line is your reputation kind of precedes you here for the Wizards. You're looked at as a perennial loser. I think going out and winning the Summer League helps change that narrative. As far as DeBonso is concerned, if I was him, hell yeah, I'd want to play more. One, he's box office. He loves to play basketball. He got eliminated early in the tournament, so he wants to hoop. And then two, like, it wasn't perfect, you know, on Thursday night. And I know a lot of people are going to, you know, give him high praise, and deservingly so. But it wasn't perfect. I want to see him knock down some perimeter jump shots. I want to see him, you know, do a better job fighting over ball screens on defense. But all in all, to everybody else's point, like, he was really, really good. I am excited that he's going to go tonight, Denton. And I hope, fingers crossed, that the mentality is from Will Dawkins and company that, hey, we came to Vegas to win this thing.
Does it in a weird way kind of make you feel good that outside of you, of course, because now you are national, but outside of you, that most national voices don't understand what's happening in Washington, therefore they are still taking the approach of like the 2022 hot take of this team is just the worst run team in the NBA when they're clearly not?
Then it makes me so upset. It makes me upset. It makes me angry. I almost can't listen to certain people like talk about the Wizards outside of people that are in our bubble here in the DMV, man. There are a couple of national guys who I think get it. Ironically enough, Kendrick Perkins is one of those people. He obviously knows Will Dawkins back from his time in Oklahoma City. But to your point, like, that's been the most frustrating piece about this last couple of months, and with the Trae Young extension, the conversation around that, and even the conversation at the top of the draft surrounding the number one overall pick. Like, the days of this group being run like a third world country are over. I'm willing to go out on a limb, Denton, and say this is one of the six or seven best run organizations in all of the NBA, man. And it's not just about what they're doing from a player personnel standpoint. Like, you look at what they're doing, you know, with the infrastructure of the facility, building and, you know, adding renovations to the practice facility, redoing the entire locker room, Capital One Arena, as you know, Denton, going, you know, undergoing major renovations right now. They're doing everything they can to improve, you know, the recovery time for players, getting better food in there and all that. Like, they have looked at this basketball operation and really changed things from the ground up, man. Even the smallest adjustments being made to ensure that, you know, they have the best chance to win. And we've dubbed them the Wizvengers. Travis Schlenk, Will Dawkins, Mike Winger. It's those three, man, that are going to be, you know, instrumental in this thing, you know, turning into a perennial powerhouse.
Linnell Willingham with us here on 106.7 The Fan. It's D-Day in D.C. How big of a deal is it that not only is all of the team there to watch Summer League, but right in the center of what feels like every photo with the team is one Anthony Davis?
Yeah. Here's what I'll say about everyone being there, first and foremost. You better be there, because right now, really only one or two guys that have their spot solidified in this starting five. We know Trae Young's going to start, and we know if he's here, Anthony Davis and A.J. DeBanser are going to start. The other spots are kind of up for grabs, so I think it's all a part of the evaluation process. How good of a teammate are you? Are you here supporting your dogs during Summer League? As far as the Anthony Davis thing goes, Denton, you know where I'm about to go with this, a place that Wizards fans are scared to go. I continue to believe that, and first of all, we just saw our first Wizards workout on social media from Anthony Davis, so that's another little tea leaf that's been dropped. I am under the belief that Will Dawkins is going to sign, this Wizards organization is going to sign AD to that four-year, $275 million Supermax. That move alone, for a group that's done nothing but good since they've gotten here, it would be a damn near fireable offense when you consider what Anthony Davis has been over the past three seasons, right? It all of a sudden becomes justifiable, Denton, if LeBron James is attached to it. And some people are thinking, what the hell are you talking about? Now, why would LeBron come to D.C.? It would be a favor for one Rich Paul, who benefits significantly from Anthony Davis signing that four-year $275 million max extension.
Right.
Here's the other piece of this for those that haven't been paying close attention to the reporting. LeBron James is in no rush to make this decision. That is one thing that has been pushed to the front with all of this. Every time Rich Paul opens his mouth, it's LeBron is going to take his time with this decision. Why is that important? Well, AD is not eligible for the extension until the middle of August. So we got some time here, Wizards fans. Don't cross your fingers. It's not totally out of the realm of possibility is what I would say.
It's also because training camp doesn't start. So LeBron James is giving us daily content by not signing until then. We're being saved by LeBron James, the World Cup, and this terrible Nationals blowpen. That's what's giving us stuff. Is there anything that you could formulate mentally and say, you know what, if Anthony Davis, because if he obviously he would get the extension before he plays. But is there anything that you could stomach? Well, if he plays, you know, X amount of games, he does these sorts of things in 2026 that would make it easier to stomach if he does get the deal.
Man, then it's just hard because, I mean, the last three, it's such a large sample size that we have right now of him not playing that, like, you would have to be basically tricking yourself, Denton, into trusting him to be healthy. Like, you would have to be essentially lying to yourself. You're basically, you know, wishing, you know, upon a star, right? He played 20 games this past season. He played 51 games the season prior. In 2023, he played 76 games. Before that, it was 56, 40, 36. So, like, the track record, going back to 2020, he has not played a lot. If he goes out this year and I guess he plays 60 games, but still, then, even under that assumption, right, that's playing 60 games this year. What about next year when he's a year older and a year more fragile? Like, I just would have a real difficult time committing to him financially long term right now with the current injury track record. But like I continue to say, if we're going to throw LeBron James in there, I'm okay.
A big LeBron to DC guy. Final few things here for you, transitioning into the NFL. Training camp coming up. Jaden Daniels has been working out in Los Angeles. He's been working out with the receivers. We still have no news on Ayuk or Stephon Diggs. What is your expectation as to who is playing wide receiver two opposite of Terry by the time the season starts?
I'll be Brandon Ayuk. I'm officially coming to that realization, ladies and gentlemen. It will not be Brandon Ayuk, despite what he continues to portray on social media. I think it's going to be a receiver by committee group. I think Terry McLaurin is going to be the guy that receives the lion's share of the targets at wide receiver. I think the next most targeted guy is going to be a tight end in Chigakonkwo. And then I think it could be either Rashad White or Antonio Williams, right, being that next most targeted guy. As far as the pseudo number two guy, who's playing opposite of Terry McLaurin outside and at the top of the numbers, I think right now it's a battle between Treylon Burks, Van Jefferson, and Dyami Brown. And Treylon Burks, throughout the spring, has been given the first crack at being that guy. I think camp is going to be paramount to kind of solve that battle. Who's, you know, not dropping the football, who's running their routes to the right depth, and so on and so forth, man. I think competition will be the name of the game for the entire training camp for the Commanders, not just at the wide receiver spot. But right now, it feels like Treylon Burks is the leader in the clubhouse.
Is there anyone in that room? Because that wide receiver room is pretty deep. Is there anybody in that room that you're expecting to have a productive season that most people might not be familiar with?
Productive is a very...
I wasn't word. Just going to let you get away with make the team.
Yeah. I think the wide receiver six spot is going to come down to Dyami Brown and Van Jefferson. I know a lot of people have this love affair with Dyami because of the 2024 playoff run and what we didn't have last year at receiver. It kind of makes him more valuable to the fan base. The reality is he signed damn near a vet minimum deal, and him and Van Jefferson are going to have to duke it out for that last spot. I think Van Jefferson, though, is going to make the team over Dyami. I think he's the more polished route runner. I think he's a better blocker. And I also think he possesses some of that, you know, top-end speed that Dyami has as well. Van is a guy that's going to look brilliant during the spring, Denton, and you've been able to bear witness to that. Runs all the routes to the right depth, crisp, you know. Like, he just out versus air and with the jersey and shorts on, he looks like a dude. We'll see if that continues in the training camp. I actually like his fit in the offense, though, man. I think he could provide something that they didn't have last year, which is, you know, a consistent deep threat. He could fly, man. He could still run.
I am the captain of the Van Jefferson hype train, so I would willingly welcome you onto the train. We have plenty of seats available, so there's a lot more room for everybody else.
This is, like a mega bus.
Linnell, appreciate it as always, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Yes, indeed, man. I'll be bothering you soon, buddy.
That is Linnell Willingham, NELL_BTP on Twitter, where you can find him. You hear him nightly on 106.7 The Fan, Monday through Wednesday into Thursday morning on Westwood One Sports Night. His producer is also pretty cool. That would be me. At The Denton Day on Twitter, 800-636-1067 is where you can join our conversation. In about 10 minutes, Pat Boyle, who covers the New York Yankees, will be on with us, get his thoughts on these first two games and how much he has enjoyed watching the Nationals blow pen do what they do best, which is blow saves and give his Yankees two wins. We continue that conversation when we get back here. It's D-Day in D.C., 106.7 The Fan. You know, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't at least excited about the premise of Anthony Davis playing for the Wizards. It's D-Day in D.C. Pat Boyle going to be with us in about 5 minutes, talk some Nats and Yankees. But seeing Anthony Davis post more and more stuff with him in Wizards uniforms and seeing the team post videos of him working out and he's with the team at Summer League, I know what the history of Anthony Davis is. I don't want to pay him the money that he seems to be demanding, certainly. I don't know that he's worth that at this stage of his career. But, man, it is exciting that he's on this team. And if he is healthy, that he's going to be healthy for this team. That's obviously a very massive if, like very massive. But I'd be lying if I said that I wasn't excited about that. I am excited about the Nats and the Yankees today because it hopefully means the Nats will be a game over 500 and get at least one from the Yankees. Pat Boyle joins us on the other side to give his thoughts on what we've seen the first two games. I'm Denton Day. It's D-Day in D.C., 106.7 The Fan. It's D-Day in D.C., 106.7 The Fan, Team 980 in the Odyssey app at The Denton Day, where you can find me on Twitter. It's been a rough two games for the Nationals against the Yankees, two blown saves. They're now up to 27 blown saves on the year. We have decided that the bullpen is now going to be known as the blow pen until they stop blowing these saves. Joining me now on the phone, he hosts BetMGM tonight. You hear him on the airwaves of WFAN in New York as well, talking a little bit about the Yankees. He is Pat Boyle, at Pat Boyle 44 on Twitter. Pat, my friend, I'm sure as a baseball fan, you've had a much better 2 days than we have had in D.C., but how are you?
I'm doing good, brother. Always a pleasure to join you, man. Happy to be on in the nation's capital. But, yeah, pretty good last 2 days here for the Bombers. Not so much for the Nats.
I mean, has it gotten to the point where you get excited when they start to pull starting pitchers because you just know that the bullpen is so weak that surely one of the massive bats with the Yankees is going to take advantage?
Yeah, I mean, look, that being said, I mean, you know, the Yankees, they've had their fair share of struggles with hitting runners in scoring position, hitting in the clutch. So sometimes you need a little bit of help, man. You need a little bit of a perfect storm. And if you just watch the first seven innings of these last two nights, you think to yourself either, wow, all right, the Nats are, yeah, this team's got a playoff berth ahead of them this year. Or you think, wow, the Yankees really do stink. They are nothing without Aaron Judge. And then the eighth and the ninth innings happen the last two nights. And, you know, there you go.
How have they done in the absence of Aaron Judge? How would you grade their performance with no Judge?
Pretty mediocre, which is what happens any time Aaron Judge gets hurt. The last time we saw it was when, you know, he smashed his foot into that giant stupid wooden slab in Dodger Stadium and missed half the year, and the Yankees missed the playoffs, and they were, you know, absolutely god awful. But anytime Aaron Judge has to miss any considerable amount of time, which again, happens basically every other year, 30, 40 games, if not longer. They're not that great of a roster. They don't have that deep of a roster to be able. I mean, you see some of the guys that were in this lineup the last couple of days, Denton, and you're thinking to yourself, like, who are these? Even if you're a diehard baseball fan, I mean, Amed Rosario at many times has been hitting in the middle of the order. You know, Trent Grisham had himself a great year last year. He's having a decent year this year, but, you know, like those guys. You know, Anthony Volpe still getting even some playing time. It can't happen. It shouldn't be happening on a daily basis, but that's where the Yankees are without Judge. They're a mediocre lineup. They're in the bottom third of baseball if Aaron Judge is not in the lineup. But the good thing is the starting rotation has been really, really solid. Still waiting for them to get completely fully whole for the first time this year, where they're rolling out Gerrit Cole, Carlos Rodon, and Max Fried, along with Cam Schlittler, who right now looks like the Cy Young Award winner. So, again, it's the same kind of story with Yankee baseball. they look like one of the best teams in the major leagues in the first 60 games of the year. Then they hit their June swoon, and if you throw in a Judge injury on top of that, the sky falls. But they're going to course correct. They'll be fine. And, you know, again, thanks to that Nationals bullpen for helping them get right the last 2 days.
What is the timeline on a Judge return? Will we see him soon after the All-Star break?
I think so. You know, and they play things really close to the vest when it comes to Aaron Judge, but you know they're not going to re-image him again. You know, for a little bit here. And Brian Cashman just said the other day he's going to have his injury re-imaged during the All-Star break. But it doesn't really seem positive, you know, to the point where like the initial timeline was like the end of July, beginning of August. Now the fact that he's going to get re-imaged during the All-Star break, remember he would still have to do a rehab stint. Hopefully the imaging is really positive. Again, he's got a fractured rib and it's in a really kind of weird place. So, I mean, at this point, it wouldn't shock me if Judge isn't back until the middle of August, like a month from now at earliest. So it's, you know, they're going to have to continue to piece it together without him.
Pat Boyle with us, BetMGM tonight. You hear it nightly on Westwood One Sports. Outside of the Yankees, I know you're a big tennis guy. Sinner, Zverev, it started already. It's early, but did you have a side in this one that you played?
Yeah. I mean, look, Sinner has absolutely dominated Sasha Zverev over the last 2 years here. He's the number one player in the world. He's the reigning Wimbledon champion. Now, that being said, Zverev did get the monkey off his back, winning the French Open. He probably had the easy, like, it was a perfect storm for him to finally freaking win one. Alcaraz was hurt, didn't have to play Sinner, who collapsed in the 100-degree heat in the second round in Paris, and he didn't face a single top 10 player the entire tournament. So, look, I give him credit. He's had a pretty easy draw here once again in Wimbledon. That opposite side is Zverev. Alcaraz hurt, didn't have to play Djokovic. But he got back to the finals. So on the grass, that's Zverev. You would think it's probably his best chance because he's got one of the biggest serves on tour. But this is actually his first time getting past the round of 16 at Wimbledon. His game just doesn't play really well on grass. He doesn't do well on quick surfaces, especially when you rush his forehand, which has always notoriously been his weakness. But again, you know, he won his first Grand Slam. Does he feel like he's playing maybe a little bit with like house money here? Perhaps, but so often, you know, you can try to look at the media X's and O's. This just comes down to a matchup that extended rallies, baseline rallies, everything Sinner does, it's going to hurt Zverev. Nothing that Zverev really does hurts Sinner. And that's why they've played each other, let's see here, four, five, six straight matches that Zverev hasn't even taken a set off of Sinner. And they played each other last at the Australian Open final in 2025, and Sinner beat him in straight sets. So, yeah, it's 3-3 here early on. Maybe just because of Zverev's serve, it looks close on the scoreline. I'd be surprised if he takes a set. I'd be completely stunned if he wins the match. So I think I pick Sinner to win to cover the game spread, minus 5.5. So, you know, I just need one lopsided set, and that should get it home.
Do you have any futures in the World Cup with the four teams that are remaining, France, Spain, England, and Argentina?
So, not to pat myself on the back, because it has been all chalk, which the World Cup rarely is, and I know maybe some people don't like that. They find it boring. You got the top four teams, the top four ranked teams, is the semifinals. I think you're looking for the best possible matchups at the end of a soccer tournament, and that's what we have here. So I think this is going to be great for the World Cup. Spain versus France on Tuesday, two of the last four or five World Cup winners, and then England and Argentina, the reigning World Cup champions in England, who it feels like they always get overhyped. But, man, this team's got freaking – both of these teams, England and Argentina, the fact that they keep coming through extra time, coming from behind, it's incredible. I pick Spain – you know, say again, not to pat myself on the back, Dan, but on my show and our buddy the Glass Man, we did the brackets together. I had this semifinal. I have Spain beating France. And I have England beating Argentina. I got Spain-England final, and I got Spain winning it. The way that things have played out, though, so far this tournament, France looks like a wagon. They look like the team to beat. They're the favorite, rightfully so. I still think if there's anybody that can slow down Kylian Mbappe and Ousmane Dembele and all those, and everybody's name on France ends in A, and they all can like freaking hit incredible shots and score goals that make you drop your jaw, I think Spain's defense is the one that can stop them. I think they've got the experience. They've got plenty of the best players at their positions in the world on their team. So I do like Spain as the dogs, and I like Spain to win the tournament.
Were you previously a big soccer guy prior to the World Cup?
Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah, I played in high school, and I grew up watching soccer, loving soccer. I watched the Premier League. And yeah, I mean, every 4 years, man, like I am super locked into it, super geek. So yeah, no, I'm a big soccer fan. So
have you had friends that were not, because like I really wasn't, like I knew the Premier League, I knew the superstars, but I was not like I didn't watch a ton of it. And because of the success of the World Cup, like I've really enjoyed it. So I'm deciding that moving forward, I'm going to pay more attention. Do you know people or have friends that have been in a similar spot to me, to where they've liked what they've seen? Like, you know what, I'm going to give this shot a chance after largely the sport is considered like kind of weird in America.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that didn't really watch soccer or weren't big fans of soccer, and this World Cup has gotten them hooked in. I mean, look, dude, like every single game has been, you know, how many games have had a goal in the 90th minute or later? Like 23 of them so far. So it's been incredible. All the come from behind wins, all the drama, you know, even though it has gone chalk, like that game, that Cape Verde, the goal that guy scored in extra time was unbelievable. They take Argentina to the brink, you know, a couple of good penalty shootouts. I think this World Cup broke the record actually for the most games that went to extra time. So every game has been drama. All the stars are playing well. Messi, Erling Haaland, Harry Kane, Mbappe. So it's kind of everything you possibly could have asked for. And then from a Team USA standpoint, I know disappointing, brutal, brutal performance against Belgium, but they do get to the round of 16. They do win a knockout game. So I think this has been everything FIFA could have asked for. And if you're if your soccer fandom is fresh, like, yeah, take this and run with it. Pick a Premier League team. You know, spend a couple Saturday, Sunday mornings watching that team. Watch the MLS. It's been great.
Pat, you're the man. Appreciate it as always. Enjoy this Wimbledon final.
Thanks, brother. Enjoy the rest of your show, man. Can't wait to catch up with you soon.
That is Pat Boyle. He hosts BetMGM tonight daily on Westwood One Sports, 6 to 11 p.m., and he covers the Yankees here among the airwaves of WFAN. Nats and Yankees, final game of the three-game series prior to the All-Star break is going to be today in little under 2 hours. First pitch, Cade Cavalli on the mound against Will Warren for the Yankees. So I feel good about the Nationals' chances, so long as they build up enough of a lead for the pitchers at the end of the game, the bullpen, as we are calling them, to make sure that they do not blow the game. Real quickly on the World Cup, I think everyone in the world of television is wanting France and Argentina. You get the two biggest superstars with Mbappe and Messi. They only care about television ratings. France is going to shred Argentina if that ends up being the case. I don't think Argentina gets there. I don't. They, to me, they have a little too many lapses on defense. And England is a much better team, as far as I'm concerned, than the Swiss are. And I think they're going to take advantage. And I also just think eventually, maybe, sort of, the officiating in the direction of Argentina is going to have to slow down a little bit. It's been very, very hard to watch them and not be like, wow, they do get the benefit of every single call. Like, that's a weird thing. Yeah, VAR really loves them. It's almost like you're pausing, going, looking at video, maybe getting an ear or eye in the sky, an ear in the sky telling you, hey, you should give this to Argentina. I do think that England's going to beat Argentina, so I think we're going to get France and England in the World Cup final. Coming up next, Conor McGregor has taken the shine from Aaron Rodgers. I'll explain what that means when we get back. It's D-Day in D.C., Denton Day on 106.7 The Fan. It's D-Day in D.C., Denton Day on 106.7 The Fan. At the Denton Day, Aaron Rodgers can comfortably rest now. He has for years been the meme of something that was gone way too quickly with his debut as quarterback of the Jets. Whenever you had something in life that you thought was going to be awesome, and then it was gone in the blink of an eye, you'd throw the Aaron Rodgers meme up. Not anymore. You can now throw up a Conor McGregor fight meme, because McGregor returned to the octagon for the first time in 5 years last night. And it was a big deal, or it was positioned as a big deal. I didn't think it was a big deal. One, not a very good person. Two, he hasn't really been a good fighter in the last couple of years. He hasn't won a fight since before COVID. That's a real stat, by the way. He's fought a couple of times since COVID, but he hasn't won a fight since pre-COVID. But he was positioned as a big deal because there was a point in time where Conor McGregor was one of the biggest, most widely recognized MMA names in the sport. He still is, if we're being honest. And he lasted a whopping 15 seconds, not even 14 seconds, before he went for a jumping head kick and shredded up his knee on, I don't know if it was the jump or the landing, I don't particularly care. And his return fight is done in 14 seconds. I mean, what an embarrassment. What a just waste of an event. It was an event that was solely positioned for the return of McGregor. Dana White was promoting it. You were getting all the ads on your Instagrams, your Twitters. If you're watching television, you're getting them there. If certainly if you were watching anything on Paramount Plus, I'm sure the Paramount Plus ads for this UFC event were like just shoving down your throat for the entirety of the last couple of weeks. And it was over before anything even really started. I found a hilarious meme that was posted on social media. Bam Adebayo connected on more punches than Conor McGregor did in Las Vegas this week. Bam Adebayo connected on one singular punch to his former teammate Tyler Herro right in the face. And Conor McGregor threw and connected on zero punches in his fight yesterday. But you know what the worst part of this is? It's not McGregor and his shredding his knee. It's not how terrible of a person McGregor is. You know what the worst part of this entire thing was, Chris? He was 37 years old with a mohawk. Like, dude, ew. Are you serious? He thought that was going to make him look like a badass warrior? You're 37 with a mohawk? Come on, guy. There are better hairstyle choices. As soon as he walked out with that mohawk, if you hadn't bet the fight, you should have immediately bet that he was going to lose. 37 with a mohawk? There are levels to this. Right? Like, if you're in a band of some kind and that is your personality, do it. That's fine. We can make an exception for that. That's very clearly not his personality. In fact, I don't know that I've ever seen McGregor walk into a fight with a mohawk and he decides to break that thing out at 37 years old. If you're 37 years old thinking about getting a mohawk for the first time, don't. Don't do it.
It's very midlife crisis-y.
Like, get a tattoo. Get a four-wheeler, buy a boat, take golf lessons. There are many better options for a midlife crisis. A Harley is a great example. An electric a moped. I don't care. There are many better options for a midlife crisis than getting a mohawk in your late 30s when that's never been something that you've done before. Even if you had, if you are in a rock band, cool. If you are not, don't get the mohawk at 37. Like, could you imagine if, say, the year is whenever the hell Tom Brady was 37 and you hadn't seen him all offseason? He shows up to training camp, you see him in his helmet, and you're like, oh, sweet, we get some Tom Brady. You're watching SportsCenter back when SportsCenter was still like something that most people watched on a regular basis outside of Van Pelt's, because we all love Van Pelt. But you're watching regular SportsCenter. And you see Tom Brady, and then he comes running off the field, takes the helmet off at 37 years old, dating a supermodel, and he has a mohawk. You're laughing endlessly at him, because who has a mohawk at 37?
I could maybe see Aaron Rodgers doing that, though.
Aaron Rodgers do have an ayahuasca trip. But that's the point. Honestly, if Aaron Rodgers and Conor McGregor, you could see them having a hairstyle, don't have that hairstyle. As simple as that. I am bald as hell. Do I like being bald? I think I pull it off. Is it my preference? No, I'd much rather have hair. At one point, I did have hair. If the options were have a full head of hair, but you had to have a mohawk or be bald, I'd be bald. I don't have that option. I'm going to be bald forever. But if those were the options, I'm not taking the having a mohawk. I'm not even 37 yet. I'm 31. Still, I'm not having a mohawk at 31. I just saw that, and I was literally stunned. I was like, there's certainly no way that he's going to win the fight if he's pulling out the mohawk look. Like, it's just such an odd look for someone to have that. Well, that's clearly not your lane. It's clearly not your lane. I'd also prefer to never see him fight again. Like, I'm totally done on the McGregor stuff. Like, some of this is tongue-in-cheek, but it's really not. He hasn't won since January 18th of 2020. Pre-COVID. Like, months before Rudy Gobert touched the microphones. We did kind of know about it at the time, but months before Rudy Gobert touched the microphones and put the USA on lockdown, that's the last time he won a fight. So at one point in time, Conor McGregor was one of the best fighters in UFC's history. He certainly was one of the biggest draws, in UFC history. That is not the case anymore. Like, you are literally just watching a washed guy come back and basically steal money from the UFC, because he can, they can promote him. He's a very easy guy to promote because there are people that are still interested and they're holding on to the Conor McGregor that was fighting Nate Diaz 10 years ago. Yeah, that those, that Nate Diaz fight situation should have been a trilogy. It wasn't. But the Nate Diaz fight and then sequel to the fight were 10 years ago.
That first one was March 5th. He jumped the shark when he fought Floyd Mayweather.
There are so many things about the fight with Floyd Mayweather that have just ruined elements of society. The idea of celebrity boxing, which that was not celebrity boxing because technically McGregor is a professional fighter, but it kind of, in a sense, was, because you were much more selling his star power than his actual ability to box, because that's just not his lane. He's a striker in the UFC, but being a striker in the UFC is not at all the same thing as being a boxer. We have seen that with these other celebrity boxing attempts. But that was kind of the start of this like wave of celebrity boxing, which is, we're going to look back at this phase of American sports in like 10 to 15 years and be like, you guys were just having random people box each other for fun, but you were paying them way more than actual boxers, and someone's going to have to answer for those crimes. I don't know who, probably Jake Paul, but somebody is going to have to answer for those crimes. Well, at least Don King could promote good fighters. Like, have you seen
him?
Have you
watched nothing?
He didn't pay him nothing, but I'm talking about the promoting of the celebrities. Have you ever watched a celebrity boxing match that you thought was good?
No.
No, because they don't exist. So I'm good on never seeing McGregor step in to the ring, the octagon, a television screen, a radio booth, a podcast. Like, if he just wants to go away and retreat to Ireland for forever, that's totally fine with me, because he can't fight and he's not a good person. So there is literally no positive element to seeing him on any sort of screen. And he also has a terrible haircut, because who has a mohawk at 37? I'm Denton Day. It's D-Day in D.C., 106.7 The Fan. When we get back, we shift to the Commander. Scott Jackson going to be with us on the program. That comes your way next on 106.7 The Fan.